Good morning. Good morning. So, is this too loud or no? No. Okay, it sounds really loud in my ear. Okay. So, I'm Helena Epstein. I'm the intern with the diocese right now. I've been here since summertime, but I haven't met a lot of folks. I've mostly been helping out with worship, and Sarah offered me the opportunity to teach an Advent class, which I was really grateful for. And the topic today is on using the I was thinking about the Magnificat, right? Because when you think about Advent, that is the canticle which is most kind of commonly associated with this time of year, and what it means to magnify the Lord with one's soul. I also, right now, am a resident at Baptist Hospital as a chaplain, and I've been thinking a lot about the ways in which people's narratives and their lives kind of point to or illuminate God's presence in their own lives, which I think is really a fascinating way to think about incarnation at this time of year. As we await for the birth of the Christ child, what does it mean for God to be present in the world, and what does it mean for God to be present in our own lives? So as I was thinking about all of these kind of heady things, I was really kind of blessed to stumble upon a work by Henry Nouwen, who a lot of people know from The Wounded Healer, but who also wrote a very simple book called Life of the Beloved, in which he lays out how it is that we are able to connect with and become aware of God in our own lives in a very simple way. So I decided to bring that to y'all as something that I've found really useful when I think about how I find God to be present in my life and the life of other people. And then we'll make some connections with that also as we go. So his basic premise is that we are beloved, that is the core truth of who we are, and that everything about our existence is beloved, which can be a little bit hard, but we'll talk about how some of that can look. And then he has this quote at the beginning that I thought really speaks to what I want us to be able to do, not today, maybe, but as we think about what it means to be present with God in our lives, that when you claim being beloved, you're not just claiming who you are, you're claiming the journey that you have to take. So it's one of those I already am and I'm becoming ways of being, right? That we are beloved, but that also means we can go deeper into that. And the map that he gives is one that I think we're all pretty familiar with. To identify the movements of the Spirit in our lives, I found it helpful to use four words: taken, blessed, broken, and given, which of course is the framework that we use for our Eucharistic theology, the words of institution, and the narrative of Jesus' life. So we're able to take this sacred text and in some ways apply it to our own being, which I think is holy. So taken, what does it mean to be taken? Being taken is to know that you're special to somebody, that you've been seen as unique, as precious, as loved. So when I'm thinking about this in regards to my own life or into other people's lives, I think, who are those people that have shown up in my life that have really helped me to see that I'm loved? And I can give a brief example of this. So when I was in sixth grade, my homeroom teacher was the football coach. He was this big guy, really tough, the first teacher to like break up fights, like if kids were fighting in the cafeteria, really tough guy. And my parents got divorced when I was in sixth grade, and I was just having a rough time. And the first and only time I ever got into trouble when I was in school, I did it pretty spectacularly and ended up in school detention for a few days. Only time it ever happened. I was a quick learner. And I had cut class with two of my friends. We left after lunch and then came back when the buses came, and all we did was kind of putter around in the playground like a few blocks over, but We got in pretty big trouble for good reason for that. And the three of us are sitting in school detention, which was this little trailer. It was really, really awful. And Mr. Shaw comes down the hill, and I think, oh, no. I'm so much trouble. If I think I'm in trouble right now, I'm going to be in so much more trouble in a few minutes. And he walks in, and he comes up to my two friends, and he looks at both of them, and he says, never, ever again, ever. And I thought, oh, God, because I knew that he really cared for me. I was a good student, a good kid, and that if he was this angry at them, he was going to be furious with me, right? So I'm waiting for, like, what kind of tongue lashing am I going to get from this man? And he comes up to me, huge dude, and puts his arms around my shoulder and says, sweetheart, if you ever need a break, just come to my office. And I said, oh, he loved me, right? I was beloved to him. And in that moment, I was able to see that and feel it. So sometimes when I'm trying to reflect on, well, what does this being taken mean? It means that someone's laid claim to the truth of who you are, right? He wasn't fear. He knew that if I took off for a few hours from school, I really just needed a timeout because I was overwhelmed. So that's my personal example for this one. I won't do too much more of that, I'm sorry, but I woke up thinking about him and thought, of course. He's one of the first ways that I knew that I was loved in this way. Blessed. Blessed isn't so much about doing good for, but being present to things in our lives. So prayer, meditation, to pay attention to God, right? You can't know that you're blessed if you don't pay attention to how those things occur. So the easiest way to begin identifying these spaces in our lives is through prayer, meditation, presence. Mindfulness for me has been a really very effective way to do this. If I'm not present to my surroundings, how can I see what might or may not be occurring? The third one, broken, is I think the hardest one for us. It's the hardest one for me. And that is because our sufferings and our pains are a part of what makes us unique, a part of what makes us I can only see the world through my own brokenness, and I can't live it through yours. We can have a similar story, but we're not the same. And the ways in which my soul has been bruised or hurt or battered over the years give me a very particular way of seeing the world and interacting with the world that allows me to heal it in a very unique way, right? All of this feeds back into that belovedness, into that uniqueness that we carry. One of the coolest ways of thinking about this, I think, is the Japanese art of kintsukuri, which is when pottery breaks, instead of just throwing it away, they pull the shards back together with gold. The idea being that the pottery is more beautiful after it's been broken. They don't throw it away, it's not trash, right? And this is how I think about my soul, right, if I'm hurting, that in some way it is becoming more beautiful, like through this experience. I think tempering is another way that I think about it. And then given, which isn't what can we offer each other, but who can we be to each other? How can I live into this holy story that is my life in such a way that other people can see it and reflect on it and get deeper insight into their own belovedness in the world? Does anyone have any questions just from that brief overview? No? Okay, so I want to do a little, like I said, I have to apologize. Y'all are going to bear the brunt of the fact that I'm a resident right now, and we're going to do a little case study. Jill Bolte Taylor is, so my floor right now is the neurological ICU, and because of that, I've been doing research on strokes, and I came across Jill Bolte Taylor, who had a stroke when she was 37 years old. She was a neuroanatomist at the Harvard Brain Bank and wrote a book after she recovered about her experience with the stroke, and I was going to let her, I'm going to show you this video of her talking about her experience of her stroke, and then we'll reflect a little bit on it together. So this is not too long. And we're having similar issues with the sound that we had last week, so this should work. Hold on. Oops, nope.
I grew up to study the brain because I have a brother who has been diagnosed with a brain disorder, schizophrenia. And as a sister and later as a scientist, I wanted to understand why is it that I can take my dreams, I can connect them to my reality, and I can make my dreams come true. What is it about my brother's brain and his schizophrenia that he cannot connect his dreams to a common and shared reality, so they instead become delusion? So I dedicated my career to research into the severe mental illnesses. And I moved from my home state of Indiana to Boston, where I was working in the lab of Dr. Francine Bennis in the Harvard Department of Psychiatry. And in the lab, we were asking the question, what are the biological differences between the brains of individuals who would be diagnosed as normal control, as compared with the brains of individuals diagnosed with schizophrenia, schizoaffective, or bipolar disorder? So we were essentially mapping the microcircuitry of the brain, which cells are communicating with which cells, with which chemicals, and then in what quantities of those chemicals. So there was a lot of meaning in my life because I was performing this type of research during the day. But then in the evenings and on the weekends, I traveled as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But on the morning of December 10, 1996, I woke up to discover that I had a brain disorder of my own. A blood vessel exploded in the left half of my brain. And in the course of 4 hours, I watched my brain completely deteriorate in its ability to process all information. On the morning of the hemorrhage, I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. I essentially became an infant in a woman's body. If you've ever seen a human brain, it's obvious that the two hemispheres are completely separate from one another. And I have brought for you a real human brain. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with the spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate. Because they process information differently, each of our hemispheres think about different things, they care about different things, and dare I say, they have very different personalities. Excuse me. Thank you. It's been a joy. Our right human hemisphere is all about this present moment. It's all about right here, right now. Our right hemisphere, it thinks in pictures, and it learns kinesthetically through the movement of our bodies. Information in the form of energy streams in simultaneously through all of our sensory systems, and then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what this present moment smells like and tastes like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like. I am an energy being connected to the energy all around me through the consciousness of my right hemisphere. We are energy beings connected to one another through the consciousness of our right hemispheres as one human family. And right here, right now, we are brothers and sisters on this planet, here to make the world a better place. And in this moment, we are perfect, we are whole, and we are beautiful. My left hemisphere, our left hemisphere, is a very different place. Our left hemisphere thinks linearly and methodically. Our left hemisphere is all about the past, and it's all about the future. Our left hemisphere is designed to take that enormous collage of the present moment and start picking out details, details, and more details about those details. It then categorizes and organizes all that information, associates it with everything in the past we've ever learned, and projects into the future all of our possibilities. And our left hemisphere thinks in language. It's that ongoing brain chatter that connects me and my internal world to my external world. It's that little voice that says to me, hey, you got to remember to pick up bananas on your way home. I need them in the morning. It's that calculating intelligence that knows, that reminds me when I have to do my laundry. But perhaps most important, it's that little voice that says to me, I am. I am. And as soon as my left hemisphere says to me, I am, I become separate. I become a single, solid individual, separate from the energy flow around me and separate from you. And this is a portion of my brain that I lost on the morning of my stroke. On the morning of the stroke, I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye. And it was the kind of pain, caustic pain, that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it just gripped me, and then it released me. And then it just gripped me, and then it released me. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain, so I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. So I got up and I jumped onto my CardioGlider, which is a full body, full exercise machine. And I'm jamming away on this thing, and I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping onto the bar. And I thought, that's very peculiar. And I looked down at my body and I thought, whoa, I am a weird looking thing. And it was as though my consciousness had shifted away from my normal perception of reality, where I'm the person on the machine having the experience, to some esoteric space where I'm witnessing myself having this experience. It was all very peculiar, and my headache was just getting worse, so I get off the machine, and I'm walking across my living room floor, and I realize that everything inside of my body has slowed way down, and every step is very rigid and very deliberate. There's no fluidity to my pace, and there's this constriction in my area of perception, so I'm just focused on internal systems. And I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready to step into the shower, and I could actually hear the dialogue inside of my body. I heard a little voice saying, okay, you muscles, you got to contract, and you muscles, you relax. And then I lost my balance, and I'm propped up against the wall. And I looked down at my arm, and I realized that I can no longer define the boundaries of my body. I can't define where I begin and where I end, because the atoms and the molecules of my arm blended with the atoms and molecules of the wall. And all I could detect was this energy. And I'm asking myself, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And in that moment, my brain chatter, my left hemisphere brain chatter, went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. Total silence. And at first I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind, but then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of the energy around me. And because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, and it was beautiful there. And then all of a sudden my left hemisphere comes back.
Okay. That cut off at a strange place. Oh. So I don't know why it cut off there, but I'll tell you the rest of the story. So she's standing there in her shower, right, and going, where are my boundaries? Like, where? And she realizes she's having a stroke. which is remarkable in and of itself, and then has to go through this very laborious process of trying to get help when her brain doesn't know that she needs help. Like, she'll think, oh God, she has this moment of like, oh God, I'm having a stroke. I have to call for help. But she said she never thought to call 911 because the part of her brain where 911 existed was damaged. It wasn't, you know, she couldn't access that piece. So she calls her lab, and only when she gets a hold of them on the phone does she realize she can't understand speech anymore and that she can't speak. She said it sounds like a golden retriever on the other end of the line. But somehow her coworker recognizes that it's her and that she's in trouble and gets her help and goes to the hospital. And that's where the slightly longer clip that I thought I had pulled up ends. But I won't go digging through YouTube right now. That would be not a good use of our time. So what I would like y'all at your tables to kind of reflect on, because obviously this is not a clean story. There's no obvious spaces where these aren't like black and white questions. But to reflect on the taken, blessed, broken, and given aspects of this story with this human being. And I'll give you all like 5 minutes to do that, and then maybe we can reflect as a whole group about, does that make sense? Does anyone have questions? I'm seeing a few puzzled faces. It's not a test, and it's not black and white. But to just look at what did she have access to, who was part of her life, what was a part of her life, and how is she now sharing those things? All right. So I'm excited by how much like chattering I'm hearing, how much talking I'm hearing. So let me hear some feedback from y'all. Like, what have you discussed at your tables? How have these connections kind of come together as you've discussed these things? Anyone, any takers? Uh-huh.
You have to be faithful to what kind of brain you have and whether you it's easier for you. I mean, deciding. She told him you have to decide whether he's left-handed or right-handed in order to play ball or play tennis. And so I'm just wondering how you know where you're supposed to go and where, what your general bent is, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go with your general bent, I think that would probably be, you'd be more successful with that than if you went the other way.
Possibly. I think there's also something to be said for doing things that aren't, that don't come naturally sometimes, right? Right, to learn from that, like, so we all have, I mean, being ambidextrous, I imagine you would learn to do different things with different hands, right? Like, I don't know if having a dominant hand, I don't know.
Does this woman ever think now with her left brain, or is it that, is
she? Yeah, she recovered. No, she's speaking. This is after the stroke. So she recovered her ability to speak, to process language. But while she was in the middle of like the core of her stroke, she lost those capacities completely. So what she's reflecting on is, and she was very much an analytical thinker before this. She was a neuroanatomist. So to have this experience of operating in a completely different way in the world really kind of, she retained that memory of being in the world differently, and that's what she's reflecting on.
Could she retain the ability to work in the right side of the brain?
Not as fully as this. Not, the stroke was kind of a, what I would call kind of a peak experience, where like she was fully disconnected from her ability to connect with her left brain, with her kind of rational linguistic capacity. That's interesting. She doesn't write about that, but I bet it did. If not to understand him better, to empathize more, right? Yes? Right. Oh, I'll take it back, unless you feel really inclined. No, I agree. I think it's remarkable. She could have had any number of... Do you want to repeat what you said so that folks could hear?
We were just talking about how God gave her a very specific problem that blessed her in a unique way, that it, if she had had a heart attack or a... and some other kind of injury, like she may not have had the same experience that brought, you know, more depth into her work and more understanding of.
Right. So yeah. That's that straight. So all of this, of course, is interconnected. But how often do you think of a stroke as a blessing, right? Like it's a profoundly life-changing event. It wasn't. It's not what we think to ourselves, like, man, this would be a great way for me to deepen my understanding of other people's sufferings and the way that the world works. And yet that's what she ultimately got out of it, which is a blessing. Does anyone else have any? I think I saw. Did you have your hand up a little bit ago? No? Okay. Anyone else? Yeah?
Being analytical and judgmental, at least in judging and trying to determine about things. And I know she was a brain researcher, she was analytical and good at that kind of logical thing. And sometimes we don't pay as much attention to the right brain kind of ways of thinking. So it really is sort of a blessing to turn off the judge completely for a little while and learn a different way of being, and then we could all do that to some degree if
right.
we choose to.
And I really love the way she describes her experience, right? She's talking about being huge, about having no boundaries and feeling perfect, which is something she had never felt before and probably isn't feeling now in the same way, but she's able to reconnect to that experience by thinking about it, right? So what are those spaces and places in our lives where we can let go of seeing ourselves, judging ourselves, and becoming, allowing ourselves to be this beloved, this kind of abstract notion of just perfectness. And I think that we all have that within us. I think that's the blessing that we're given through Christ, right? We're waiting, we're in Advent, we're waiting, but it also already exists. So I think I'll move on then because we're running short on time. The last thing I want is for y'all to talk a little bit more. And I'll give the disclaimer ahead of time. Share what you want to share with each other. Don't share what you don't want to share with each other. This isn't a, like, bare your souls experience. But what I want is for you all to think a little bit about these aspects of your own life, right? So this is more of a free-for-all. You don't have a template. And you can pick one of the four, two of the four, all of them, none of them, however you're comfortable. But share a little bit about who's a person or an experience in your life which is in which you have felt loved, in which you've known you were loved, no questions, right? Where do you notice the presence of God in your life? For some people, it's their garden. For some people, it's their children. For some people, it's an art. Like, it's different for everybody. In this one, this three, like I said, you don't need to share what you don't want to share with each other. But What pain, losses, or trials have given you a deeper, richer sense of the world and how you interact with it? And then, can you think of one person who you can share these things with outside of this space? And what would sharing that look like? So I'll let you all talk a little bit again. Give it four to six minutes, so five, I guess. I'll just round it. And then we'll come back together. If anything comes up that you want to share, great. If not, then we'll just wrap up. But I really want you all to reflect a little bit on how these components intersect with your own connectedness. All right, I really hate to wrap up because I think I'm hearing like little snippets of some really awesome conversation, but I also want to be mindful of the time. Did anything come up from this part of the exercise that you all would like to share with the larger group? No? This piece is a little more intimate, like I would understand if you don't want to, but if anything that you would feel comfortable sharing, you will? That's okay.
So my father is 92 years old and in fairly good health, but he's a stubborn old cuss. Among the things he does is he refuses to consider moving out of his house or making any provision for what might happen if he needs some kind of care in the future. And, you know, his children are really frustrated by this and worried about what's going to happen at some point. Everything's fine now, but, you know, where are we going with this? Let's plan. Let's make some provision. You know, and then I reflect on it, and I think, my gosh, my father is 92 years old and still alive and still doing really well. What a wonderful thing to have. So, you know, it's a problem, but it's a wonderful problem, and it's such a blessing to be in this situation.
Thank you. Anyone else? No? Okay. So, whoops, wrong direction. So this is the, like I said, my soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit hath rejoiced in God my Savior, which is the KJV translation of that quote. I don't often pick the KJV, but I think this is just beautiful. And then this, we are intimately loved long before our parents, teachers, spouses, children, and friends loved or wounded us. That's the truth of our lives. That's the truth I want you to claim for yourself. Just now. And so to wrap up, I think we have a really incredible opportunity in this season and in our lives to lay claim to and help illuminate God's presence for ourselves and for each other. And I would encourage you all to do that work. It's the work of Christ, it's the work of the Spirit, and it's the work of the church. So I would bless you all, and thank you very much.